Well, good afternoon, 360 Coaching listeners and followers. My name is John Christmas IV, coming at you finally from Reno, Nevada. So talk to you guys a lot about how I'm moving up here. I am connecting into this community and absolutely loving every minute of it. So today, you guys know what 360 Coaching is all about. We try to find the most unique coaches, mentors, teachers, everything we can to give you guys some diversity on what it is that this whole world is about. And today we get lucky enough to have the CEO, Duncecap, right here with us. Alex, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners? This is all about you, so why don't you tell them about yourself?
I'm really excited to be on with you today. This is a really fun opportunity, and I'm glad you're liking Reno. I always try to play tour guide and get people excited about Reno when they come up here, but it's great when I don't have to do very much work and you're already excited about the area, so that's great. My name is Alex Ellison. I founded Dunce Labs in 2013 as an opportunity for me to basically be the person I wanted when I was 16. So I was a first generation college student, didn't get any advice in this process of, you know, what comes next after high school. And my parents did the best they could, but I felt like I was kind of winging it and thrown into the fire. Fortunately, though, I was thrown into the fire because what I learned turned into a business venture, you know, and you probably have talked to entrepreneurs before. Oftentimes ideas come out of frustration. So I was very frustrated with the process of kind of counseling really in general and especially with high school students. And so out of that frustration came this idea to really create something outside of the school system, but that works intimately with the school system. And this is my way of helping young people. So I, you haven't asked me about the name yet. I was kind of waiting for that to come up.
So that actually is always something I like skipping towards. I go with the flow with this. So, but how did you come up with the name? Because I know, for those of you who go online, please do, because he has these fun pictures of Einstein with a dunce cap on. So I encourage all of you to go online and please follow Alex, because what she's doing is really great. But I would like to know how you came up with that name.
So I remember, I had a 2-month-old baby at the time that started my business, right? Like crazy, like who does that, right? So anyway, I started this business. I had worked in kind of a more traditional practice based in kind of your neck of the woods, actually, your old neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
And wanted to really kind of shift things a little bit, because what I was realizing there were a lot of kids who would never go seek private counseling, right? You know, you've heard of tutoring and all this stuff, but private counselors really started kind of getting a bad name for themselves. Unfortunately, there's about 10,000 of us in the United States right now, a little bit less. But that industry just grew tremendously as college tuition increased and as the kind of college admissions process just became really complicated. Some of them got a bad name because you have some college counselors who will charge a bazillion dollars and promise to get your kids into Harvard. And I thought, okay, so what can I do to really show people that that is so not me, because I so don't identify with that.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, who am I really trying to reach? And I'm thinking to myself, and I, you know, my husband was kind of the inspiration, and don't tell him I told you that he's a dunce.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, he was this kid who just, you know, barely graduated high school, like just hated high school. But, and unfortunately, you know, that experience told him that he wasn't very bright, when really the exact opposite was true. You know, totally this self-learner, self-driven. And I thought, you know, I want to hit the kid who is really not feeling great right now in his or her high school, who's not feeling smart because of their environment. And so, you know, the Einstein quote has always inspired me. It's right here on my wall there. Everybody's a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it's going to live its whole life thinking it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I thought, you know, what are words that really embody that? And I thought, dunce. No one really uses the word dunce that much anymore. But if you go to, like, have you been to Virginia City yet?
This old I area? Have.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's an old school there, right? And last time I was there, they had this old fashioned dunce cap. And I think of like the old fashioned dunce caps. So that's kind of why you see some of these old fashioned posters in our office. And I thought, you know, okay, so who is the dunce? Like, who labels the dunce? Well, the teachers label you a dunce, right? You're a dunce because you didn't do something right, because you didn't follow their paradigm, or you didn't fit into their paradigm, you didn't follow the rules. And I thought, I kind of want to reach out to the kid who doesn't follow the rules. Like, that's the kid I like working with. You know, I want to work with the kid who's like, you know, screw that system. I'm going to do it my way. And I'm brilliant, but just not in your four walls, you know, in your box. So I came up with the name Dunce and was really excited to kind of have a different branding strategy. And I, you know, was setting up my LLC and told my lawyer the name of my company. And he was like, Alex, I think you should sleep on that. I don't think that's a great idea. And I was like, you just proved to me that this is an even better idea. So I, at the time I was reading one of Seth Godin's, I love Seth Godin, marketing genius, and I was reading one of his blog posts, and it was something about, you know, naming your company. And if there are a few people who don't like the name of your company, it's that you're probably on the right track. So I thought, okay, great. There's my sign. I'm going to go with it.
And that was funny too, because when I created 360 coaching, as myriad of things as it is, everyone told me like, well, you're this, this, and this. And I go, no, I want to do all those things, and I'll just find out who's really interested in it. And when you go, again, I talk to listeners all the time, please do not go with the majority, because then you're going to find yourself in the most trouble you've ever been in. So that's why I love Dunce. When I was looking up all these companies, I'm like, ooh, yeah, there's someone. So when and then the other thing I want to talk really about, Alex, because I've seen this once or twice now, and I did a thing, this gap year thing, I saw on the site. I know you're, I don't know if you're a fan, obviously I'm going to guess yes, but talk to me about that, because that is really heading way now.
It's huge, you know. And it's funny because, like, I feel like our European friends will say, you know, gosh, you guys are a little bit late, you know, we've been doing this forever, you know, we encourage our students to take a gap year, whether it's doing civil service or something else. And I'm an advisor for a gap year program that I love in the Bay Area called UnCollege. And Dale Stevens, the founder, was one of the first Thiel Fellows. And Peter Thiel, he started this foundation for kids under 20. And he said, you know, look, I'll give you guys money to start a business if you forego college for 2 years. And it was pretty controversial, right? Because it was sort of like encouraging students to not pursue higher education, at least for a couple of years. So Dale was an unschooler growing up and dropped out of college, just was like, this is not for me. I'm not finding my fuel here. And so was one of the first Thiel Fellows, started UnCollege out of this, which is a gap year program. And in this gap year program, kids spend a segment of the year going abroad, a segment of the year in launch phase in San Francisco, where they're learning life skills and talking to awesome mentors and coaches. And then they also spend a segment actually interning. And through all of that, they're thinking about an independent project, like what's something that they want to introduce to the world. And so I fell in love with what they were doing, and I had been researching gap year programs kind of all the while, and really fell on this one and thought this was really cool. So connected with Dale when I was at a conference a couple years back in San Francisco, and I go down there now like every quarter or something to work with those kids. For those students who've been really sort of duped by the education system and maybe unfortunately are looking at college as a whole as a negative thing, I try to go in there and say, look, there are some really cool colleges that I think are really gonna feed you. You know, if you're interested in open, let me talk to you a little bit about those. So to kind of, for those kids who are maybe a little bit like, oh, I'm hating college right now, I sort of reintroduce college to them in a new light. And a lot of those kids won't go into college and they'll be incredibly successful. But for those who are still thinking that's an option for them, I serve as their guidance counselor in that. So it's a lot of fun for me. But I encourage every student, regardless of how gung-ho they say they are about college, I say, cool, like, have you considered a gap year? You know, and can we also talk about a gap year? And I've found that my students who have taken advantage of, of a gap year, or you could say, you know, it's really a year on. I would say a gap year is actually probably more engaging than your freshman year of college. So it's really not a year off. And but the kids who do that, I would say, are some of the most ambitious, most brilliant, hardworking. They really have, I think, the maturity to say, you know, this is, I know college will be there in a couple of years, or a year, whatever. I'm gonna take a year and do something not related to education for, you know. And there are gap year programs where students can get college credit, and that's great too. But a lot of students will take a year to learn foreign language, go do service, something like that. And then I encourage, if students are like, no, that's a little too much for me, I'm not quite ready to do a gap year, I'll say, well, then let's do something over the summer that's just something like a total pause from your normal life that's gonna just completely get you out of your element. And I think that's really important.
There's so much of what I tell athletes, parents, a lot of the coaching I do is be very comfortable in the uncomfortable. The gap year, to me, if you send them to where they're going to be within the U.S., is just so protected. I like giving them that idea of, listen, go to people that are smarter than me for this, but get outside of your comfort zone, learn another language, hire a tutor, learn salsa.
Yeah.
Big believer in Tim Ferriss's stuff, where he says, 4-hour body work week chef. I really like the new book he has. But
oh yeah, same.
Get uncomfortable, get weird, and learn how to autopilot the rest of your life. So
yeah.
I like when people take off years and gap years and all those things. I didn't have that when I was a kid. Growing up, I was always taught, you go to the right schools, you become a lawyer or a doctor, and you do that. Now, that culture is completely, like, when you've seen now the past, like, let's say, let's jump into the future then. 5 years from now, where is education going that you see? Because you're on the cutting edge right now, and now where's it going?
You know, it's interesting. We are in this really interesting sort of cross section right now where just when I think I know it and think I have it figured out, you know, my students surprise me, right? Because we're humans and we change a lot and we pivot, and we're pivoting a lot more quickly these days. So it's really kind of hard to track where students are going. A report just came out on kind of what Gen Z is looking like, right? These kids kind of born 2000. And I just started working with my first class of kids born in 2000, which was just so weird to me because that doesn't seem like it was very long ago. But these kids, you know, are 16 years old now. And these kids are very pragmatic. If you compare them to the millennials, these guys are still altruistic, right? They still want their work to make an impact, but they're much more money conscious and much more fiscally responsible than, you know, my generation was. And on one hand, I think this is really great. They're very mature. But their pragmatism and their realism sort of scares me sometimes because I wonder, you know, if there's going to be enough dreaming, right, in this generation. Like, are they going to be thinking big, and are they going to be dreamers and idealists also? Because you want to be an idealist before you're a realist, don't you? Like,
of course. So, well, let's hope they progress that way.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I have noticed that this class is way more concerned about the cost of education. And I would love to see more students questioning the tuition model that we see in this country, because it's totally out of control, completely out of control. And I was really excited. This year was a huge year for me. This was the first year I saw close to 10 of my students, which doesn't sound like a lot, but really it is in my profession, applying to schools abroad. We're talking Canada mostly, but also the UK. I had a student just submit his application yesterday to a school in Germany. Another student applied to a school in Switzerland. So this is really interesting. And if you read reports, this isn't just me anecdotally. This is happening. Students are realizing, you know, maybe the U.S. doesn't totally dominate this area. Like, I can actually get a good education elsewhere and pay significantly less. And this is really exciting. Now, unfortunately, you know, Canadian schools are also, several of them are raising their tuition too. I mean, you wonder, okay, sort of what the cap is going to be on this. But I see this being the first generation that's going to say, you know what, no, we're not going to pay that. So you can change policy and actually start to change your tuition model, because it's completely unfair to us, and we're sick of being straddled with debt, you know, or we're going to go elsewhere. And I think that this is a really interesting, we're at a cross point that I think is going to really change things. So yeah, it'll be interesting.
And then that's, I call them the Generation X, because I can't really figure them out. They really are very smart about how to use their technology, how to figure out answers. And I see that financial wisdom coming from them because of probably what happened in 2008 and yeah, other things that have happened. Now they're raised in a time where we need to figure out education, but we can go to a trade school in Europe. Mm-hmm. We can go abroad. And I highly encourage people, like, fine, do it. I'm a big fan. Whatever makes you uncomfortable and grows you, mm-hmm, great. And, you know, that's as big as I can get. I'm like, people, get weird.
Yeah.
As I like to tell people, get spicy.
Yes.
And think above where we are in the U.S.
Yeah. So I think Gen Z is actually very similar to Gen X. You know, Gen Xers are like in their 30s and 40s right now, I guess. And I see some similarities in terms of like entrepreneurship and kind of like the independence and like I can do it myself. I do see a lot of that with Gen Z, just that these kids kind of rising through high school right now, rising through the ranks. And you know, they are very high tech, and these guys want to work with their hands. They want to be experiential learners. They don't want to sit and just listen to you talk at them, which I don't know if anyone really ever loved, but this is the first group of kids who I think are actually seeing their demands being met in the classroom. You know, I just came from a school before this interview, and they're talking about really making, you know, maker spaces. I was at a middle school. I mean, making maker spaces at middle schools. I'm now part of this entrepreneurship education program at some schools just south of here, and the kids are just loving it. Like, teach me how to go make it, build it, do it myself. The freelancer economy is huge, and I see that as, you know, kind of something that's going to continue. We're job hopping, right? We're pivoting more quickly. We're not staying in the same jobs for more than a couple of years. So I think that stuff's really exciting. I know some people might see that as really scary. I think that's really awesome and exciting, though. I mean, as an entrepreneur, like, I think that's cool.
Yeah, so for me, and this is not anything, Alex, so I hate the word entrepreneur just because it's like the new sexy thing to want to be one, but nobody wants to put in the actual work and execution behind it.
Right.
So I tell people to go away from it. I just tell them, be a good business person, but I've also spoken at entrepreneur conferences, and it's really awkward when you say that to them. But I tell them I'm not one, so don't think that I, like, consider myself one and not you guys. But You mentioned a lot of things that I think are unique, because I know there's a huge push right now in the education field because of obesity and all these other things, but the idea of standing desks, the idea of health education. But since you're actually in the schools, and this is just my little side blur because I like this stuff, where do you think for an education push, can we get these students to actually be healthier? Like, maybe this is a Nevada thing, but...
Yeah. Okay, so this is so interesting. I'm probably the person you hate, because I have workshops here at the office, and I put popcorn on. If you ask my students, like, I make the best popcorn. Like, that's my thing. I always have popcorn at all my workshops. I had a bowl of popcorn on the table for this workshop that we did a few weeks ago. Not a single student touched a kernel. Like, it was amazing. I was like, oh my goodness, this is the first group of kids. And I would say I'm noticing it really with the kids who are like 16, 17. This is the first kind of, these are the students I'm really seeing it with. They are so interested in not just their personal health, but that's definitely there too, but global health education and nutrition. I have two of my students this year who voluntarily chose to be part of their school district's health advisory boards to have a say in what our school lunches look like. I have never had a student demonstrate that interest before. So I'm definitely seeing a greater, consciousness around that. Again, for these kids' personal health, but also just a recognition that, like, you know, global health and global nutrition is so, so important, and they really care about that stuff. And, you know, my friend just opened up a juice bar down the street, and when you go in there, all the kids in line are, like, high school students. I mean, it is, like, you know, and call it superficial, whatever, but whatever gets them in the door, right? It's cool. And they will pay $10 for juice. I mean, it's like, make it trendy, and but at least they're, you know, putting nutrients and healthy things in their bodies, right?
And you know, and I know the listeners have heard me bark on this one for a very long time. I do not care what it is you do, whether you consider it weird or cool or whatever it is, because the reality is everyone who was ever probably successful at some point, everyone thought was really, really weird. And it goes against everything I ever believe in to fit into the majority. Mm-hmm. So I always, you know, coming up listening to Green Day, they had the song Minority, and it's my favorite song of theirs, of course. But I follow a lot of the idea of go away from what they're going with, because then you're going to find yourself in a whole new world. So, you know, speaking on, you know, really where you were, I want to know too, because I always like the experiences, when you were creating this, I want to know why you, like, what were... Did you get fired, or did you, like, just see and I just so upset now? Because people think, oh, I want to be happy. No, you can be upset and still come up with a great business. So I want to know that story.
I definitely started from a dark place. And I don't know if I would recommend that. Like, you know, it was just, that was my path. Like, I got really pissed off. And then that led to some really exciting discoveries. And now I'm incredibly happy and feel incredibly grateful to be able to do what I do. But it came from a place. So I would say first it really started, you know, my senior year in college, just being like, wow, so here I am, I'm about ready to graduate, great education and all of that, but I have just been going through the motions, like, not really thinking about what my, like, what's right for me and what my path should look like, and just feeling like I didn't really get the mentorship and the guidance that I would have loved and would have been hugely helpful as a 21 year old. And then I said, you know, I'm going to jump into education and kind of tried on a few things for size. Like, I worked at the university setting. I worked, I taught English abroad. And then I went to the private sector and worked for a more traditional college counseling company in the very competitive place we call, you know, the Bay Area, Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And so the stakes were pretty high for those families, you know, and I still wanted to work with high school students. That was the niche I loved working with, and I really wanted to help them in this pivotal place, you know, between the in that transition from high school to college. And so I was working for this company. They hired me to open up a Reno office, so I was up here working in Reno. You know, had just had my daughter, and was like, you know, one, I don't love working for somebody else. Like, that was pretty apparent. I mean, it sounds like, wow, that's intelligent. But really, I mean, if you were to ask me when I was 18, 19, like, do you see yourself starting a business? I would have totally rolled my eyes at you and been like, no, I want to go work for another big powerhouse company, and like, where someone else has already taken that risk. Like, that's, I did not see myself as a risk taker. I didn't see myself as an entrepreneur. I was a really good student. Like, I was really good at following the rules. And now when I look back on that person, I kind of am like, you, you know, but that's who I was then. And so I remember taking an entrepreneurship class in college and like hating it, just being like, this is so not me. And I think it part of it was because I always thought entrepreneurship meant that I had to like create widgets and sell them. And I was probably more, if someone had said, have you ever heard of like social entrepreneurship, or like that you can combine, you know, something you care about in the social sector with a for-profit company, I would have been really, my ears would have, you know, perked up. But I didn't really have, I was never exposed to that. So, you know, but when my daughter was 2 months old and I thought, you know, actually, I think I can do this. I couldn't work for the company I was working for anymore. There were just too many differences. I wanted to create a business that was uniquely fit for the Reno community, and that would be great for the students here, where, you know, we don't have this traditionally strong college-going culture, especially college-going outside of the state of Nevada. So I wanted to create something that was really unique for us, not the same model that worked in the Bay Area. It's just different. And so I wanted to create something that was very local. And so I just jumped, and I did have I had a client who kind of gave me the nudge and said, I think you can do this. And I think that was really all it took for me to really leap. And I was fortunate enough to have a handful of clients who took a risk in me and were willing to let me guide their students. And that's how it started. And then, you know, I don't have a marketing plan. I don't have a marketing budget. It's all word of mouth. It's all word of mouth, 100%. And that's how I've gotten to the point I am today. I'm in today, and now I can't imagine, you know, having done it or doing anything else, really. I can't imagine doing anything else. But when I say that I didn't like working for anyone else, I noticed, and I don't know if you feel the same way about your past, but when I look back at the jobs that I had, I just always remember thinking, like, I could do this better. I could do this. I wish I could do it this way, you know. And I think a lot of people who start their own businesses say that. But
for me, my struggle came in really where I spent a lot of time with professional sports, college, and then I dealt a lot with the corporate industry, and I hated it. Mm-hmm. To be honest, the reality behind me was I did know a lot, but I would be vocal about it, and they would get really upset because it was not their way. Their way is the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Your health is not really the concern. It is really just, can I cover enough of our balance, our bottom line, and then we're good. We don't care because we're traded on the stock market. We're a publicly traded company, and I'd had enough. Mm-hmm. So that was the same thing. I was pissed, and I was very upset, and I eventually got the right nudge in the right direction and said, you can do this. You don't need the same thing as you. I don't have any marketing budget. It is word of mouth. It is getting in the community, and it's really just getting weird, getting spicy, and that's why I love doing this. So
yeah,
it connects me. But
The
other major thing I love going into, because entrepreneurs and everybody I've ever met with really good business people have self-improvement plans, and I always love knowing, so Alex, your self-improvement plan, day by day, week by week, month by month, or year by year?
Yeah, oh man, that's a good one. That's a good question because, right? I mean, it's always a work in progress. It's sort of like I could show you my half-baked plan. It's sort of like in progress, right? You know, I try to read as much as I can, obviously, in my profession, but I was just having this conversation with my husband the other day that sometimes I get sick of reading about my profession. Like, I get some of the best ideas reading a book that's totally out of my profession. And I would say one of the most transformative books for me was Where Good Ideas Come From. And I love the idea of brewing diverse ideas and kind of coming up with something new. And I love the idea of, and I mean, I like all of Stephen Johnson's work. I think he's got a really unique approach of like kind of combining history and math and science in a really cool way. And so I am, you know, trying to rub elbows. I always try to rub elbows next to people or with people who inspire me in and out of my profession, but usually out of my profession. Like, I love kind of being interdisciplinary. I walk a fine line, and I don't know if I have the answer. How should I say this? I'm finishing up my master's, and so I do believe that in some respects, like continuing my education has been part of my professional development plan, but I would say most of my professional development happens outside of the classroom, which is interesting coming from a college counselor, right? you know, I love talking to other starters and innovators. I go to conferences. I'm heading to South by Southwest next week to put myself around some other like education entrepreneurs and innovators. That stuff really inspires me. My challenge right now, and I was talking to a girlfriend about this, like, is finding role models and kind of mentors. You know, I don't believe in like having a hero or whatever. That's like, I've never, even as a kid, I don't think I really had like a hero or someone I really looked up to. But I love having people, and I have a couple right now who I can just call and ask business questions, and I know they won't judge me. And they won't, you know, go chat to their friends about what my business is, you know, what's going on in my business. And those people, I think, are tremendously valuable. I think when I first graduated college, I had this mentality of like, I'm going to go it alone. You know, who sang that song, Go It Alone? I can't remember.
I'm terrible with music, so I'm really not the one to ask. Thank goodness my fiance is really bad with music too.
Good.
But if
yeah.
it wasn't in the 90s, I'm out. Like,
right?
Oh gosh.
So
yeah.
funny. You know, but I think I had this kind of mentality, again, kind of coming from that angry place of like, I'm going to do this by myself, and I'm going to go it alone and do it on my own, and I don't need anyone's help. And I think now I'm coming around to the place, and I'm 28 now, and realizing that is so unhealthy. You have to have community. You have to build roots. You've got to have... My big thing for 2016 is I want tradition. So I really, you know, I've got a two-year-old, and I thought... This occurred to me really like this year. I really want her to have like solid traditions. I feel like we're kind of losing sight of those in our society, and I really want her to have like quirky, dorky traditions, like that have no, like, you know, I don't care if it's like, ooh, we eat Chinese food on New Year's Eve or whatever, you know. I just want to have like funny little things that we do that she rolls her eyes at when she's 18. So I have little goals like that that I want to balance. You know, it's really easy to get caught up in kind of the you know, the business and being a CEO of a company and all this stuff. But I think it's so important to, you know, go work in the garden and like go do, you know, randomly take a morning off with your daughter. And I try to do stuff like that. But it's hard. Like I said, it's a work in progress. You know, it's really easy to be like, sorry, the business takes priority because that's our livelihood, right? And so I'm really working on that balance. I just told you I'm reading Thrive right now by Arianna Huffington, you know, and I really love what she talks about there and like kind of redefining success and not letting yourself like crash from exhaustion. You know, I hate the whole like, oh yeah, I only got 3 hours of sleep last night, you know, and like that's a badge of honor. I'm like, that should be embarrassing. You know, so
yeah. And so often that I call it embracing the chaos. Like, I'm really good with jumping around, but the reality is like after 6 o'clock I really will shut off my brain pretty well. And I've gotten better at that now that I have a fiance who also is in the medical field, and it helps to have that. That balance is always, you can work really hard, but then you got to play hard too. So 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, however people roll. I tell people, create your little mini retirements a year. Every 3 months, take 3 or 4 days. Every 6 months, take 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, create your mini retirements and with your self-improvement plan, because that is part of it.
Yep.
So often in my field, no one rests.
Yeah.
Overtraining's huge, especially in your business. So
right.
It's awesome to do that. But
yes.
I always like bringing this into, so being that you are married, you know, I always like bringing in how it is, you know, when you have a partner and you have someone in crime, you know, how is it that your husband has really helped your business? And it has nothing to do probably with your business at all, like me. But
it actually does.
It does. So it's
it
even
totally
better
does.
When people answer that.
Yeah.
That way.
I mean, it starts with the very, you know, cliche, like, he was my rock and all this, but that's 100% true. Like, when you're about to, so when I started Dunce, he was about ready to quit his job and start his own company. And he kind of, you know, ushered me in front and let me go first. And I thought that was the most, like, generous act in our marriage, you know, to say, like, because the whole plan for like 6 months was for him to quit his job, and he's a copywriter. So he was going to go freelance. And he said, no, I think you need to go first. And so, because we couldn't afford for both of us to do it at the same time, with our 2-month-old baby. And so he let me go first, and I thought that was incredibly generous. And I don't know if that would happen in every marriage. And so I was really grateful for that. And then a few months later, he did in fact quit his job and went freelance. And so, you know, he's a copywriter, so he obviously helped me in a very kind of technical way with my branding and my content. And with my the kind of the copy and the layout and my storytelling, and he's great at kind of articulating a story and a message. And who better to help you articulate your message than your husband, right? Who's kind of been there through the highs and lows, and as this whole thing evolved. So he was a huge support in that. So yeah, and for a while he actually did just work for the company, and then now he works works on other things.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not like a great person to work right next to, but.
Well, that's based on whose opinion. So my biggest thing is always because my fiance, because she works in for hospitals, but that's corporate in reality. And I'm trying to really push now since our businesses feed each other. And I always am a big fan of the book I'm reading right now is called Teaming.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book written by a Harvard professor who does a lot of work with teams and especially executives, but it's all about creating the team network, the environment, and you have to be able to reach out and take risks really. Because sometimes, yeah, it's not always going to work out, but if you don't work as that, it's not going to get us anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a it'll be a unique experience when I can get her away from that. And if I can get her working for herself, you know, though the stress is there, it's so different. You know, when I was working in corporate and I had stress, it was not good. Now that I have it, it's how do I get to my next appointment within 15 minutes? I don't mind that because it makes me focus.
You're in charge, right? I think that's the huge difference. Like stress for somebody else's sake or for someone else's profit versus stress for your own sake. I mean, I think too much of either can be devastating, but I'm with you. I think stressing about my own company and stressing about seeing it be more awesome is, I think, slightly better if we were to kind of evaluate stress.
Well, because if I'm going to push all the chips in, I'd rather it be me than having someone else try to do it for me and then failing me instead of I actually do it. I don't mind failing, but as long as I fail forward, I'm good with that. But actually, at least that's a good transition. But I deal a lot with failure in industries like business or health or anything because people get there and then they don't know how to get over it. But especially in education, how do you teach failure to students? What do you tell them about it? You know, bring me through that process.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me how have I failed, and I was like, shoot, we need another 2 hours. Man, I only have my business isn't even 3 years old, and I could have a whole segment on failure. With the students I work with, this is one thing that sort of troubles me with, you know, kind of the current school environment. And a lot of my students come in and they're, you know, they really have a hard time articulating a time that they failed. They can't think of, they might go back to like when they were six and they like tripped at the playground and it was embarrassing. And I'm like, no, we're not, that's not it. And so it's unfortunate because I don't think they're given enough opportunity to fail, they are not put in environments where failure would even be a possibility. And it's funny, this usually comes up when I'm starting to help them write their college admissions essays. Often a question is, tell us about a time you failed and how you dealt with it, or a time you dealt with adversity. And students hate those questions. I mean, it's typically really, really tough for them. And they feel like they have to make some up. And I don't know if you've heard this, but there have been cases of, you know, really unethical cases of students making things up to sound like they've overcome this incredible hurdle in their lives. And, you know, I just start by getting students out in the community, doing things that they're not comfortable with, whether that's taking a gap year or whether that's doing something like we're doing right now, an informational interview or something like this. I have a mentor list, and that is probably my favorite part of my job is connecting students with mentors, getting them out in the community, that's why this office is not in the suburbs. Like, I intentionally put my office in downtown where, yes, this alley is a little seedy at night. Like, you know, like, let's get you looking at something that you don't get to look at every day. Let's get you put in an environment where you have no exposure to. You know, you don't need to go to a, you know, an inner city environment or a developing country. It's like, it's in our own city. Like, there's diversity in this little city of Reno. Like, you know, go find it. And so getting them into new environments, I think, is the first ingredient for, you know, healthy failure. And I really think that we could be doing a lot more of that, even just as parents. Like, hey, try this thing. And not, you know, working with our kids as they're fearful of this failure, but really allowing them to have those opportunities. Because failure, as you know, I mean, that leads us to some of the most brilliant discoveries and the most exciting opportunities. And I would hate for students to be barred from those things. So getting them involved with new things, new opportunities, getting them outside of their school environment, meet new people, you know, experience rejection. I'm doing a segment on cold calling tomorrow and doing informational interviews. And I prefer a warm call, right? If you can do a warm call, that's even better. But the point is that these so many kids are so fearful of making that connection. You know, it's even to the point where when I introduce a student to a mentor, I actually facilitate the intro. So I, you know, will write an email to both the mentor and the student. And even then, students are still afraid to respond back. And this is something that very easily we as educators and parents could facilitate and really push our kids into that fire because it's so important. So I try to, you know, do that.
And that is, being from someone who was in sales for a long time, having cold calls and doing that and getting really, it's so uncomfortable. Again, your voice cracks. You know, when I was being, to do Pilates instructing, they film you and they record you and then they will play it in front of all the students. And that is a very humbling experience when you are a male in front of 7 females.
Yeah.
So it was really weird, but man, like, you work through that and then you get better and then a little bit better. That's those baby steps forward.
Yep.
It helps so much. And that being on the phone is probably awkward too, but in person is even worse.
Oh yeah. You know, I gave a big talk in January, and in preparing for it, I had to present a couple times in front of a committee. And, you know, I've always thought I'm a decent public speaker. Like, this is something that I can handle pretty well. Like, I did speech and debate in high school, right? Like, how hard can this be? And I've talked to many parent groups and things like this. But this was the first really big presentation. And the committee tore me apart. I mean, and not everyone on the committee was even constructive, but you have to deal with people like that. You know, there was a woman who just flat out said, I hate your hand gestures. And I thought, okay, well, that's super helpful. Thank you. How do you like this one?
Yeah. That's what I'm, yeah.
Right? Yeah, no, but you know, that through that experience, I realized that if I can still get up and give this talk in front of 1,400 people, then everything after this will seem so much easier because I have completely been like hammered into the ground. Like I was feeling pretty low, you know, but was still able to deliver the talk, do it well. And then it was like, after I did, I remember I was just like, wow, like, throw anything my way. Like, nothing's going to be difficult now. And I think every time you overcome something that's really scary or you overcome a rejection that's really, really just devastating, everything else seems that much more manageable and easier to tackle. And that's growth, right? I mean, it's just like, work, you know, in your world, working out. Like, if you go to the gym after the 16th time and it's now easy to do the thing that was originally really, really tough, that's progress. And so that's how I see it.
Well, I always describe my profession, and I deal with many things in health, but my job is a natural way that it's an irony because I have to make your body worse, and through that super compensation, it gets better. So my job is a walking irony, and I've never thought of any other profession the same way. Like, you're going to have to fail as a doctor, and then you may lose a life. You have to fail as an educator, and a student may fail. Like, getting through those things, but then don't let them off, you obviously keep them going, you know, and it's tough because no matter what I do, life and death is not really the consequence. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people that I've worked with that those are real consequences. So I get lucky, I guess I could say. But the one thing that pushes me on is always, I love reading, as you've said, for self-improvement and all that stuff. It keeps me going. Because if I can read about other people failing, it's like when you watch the Golf Channel.
Yeah.
And Tiger Woods hits a really bad shot, and I feel much better about my golf game because I can do that, and he gets paid hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's much better for me to get some humble pie in, as I say. But speaking on when you've done your public speaking stuff, because I love public speaking, and I love getting people awkward in that. How is it that you found that, because you sound like you prepared for this, how is it, though, when you're actually out there and mm-hmm. you're in front of all those people?
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through your process because everyone deals with it differently.
Yeah, yeah. So typically I actually don't prepare a ton for small talks. So I love having conversational talks with, usually I'm presenting to parent groups and students, and I love having something that's more conversational. I love giving my time and giving an opportunity to parents and students to ask lots of questions. I work in an industry where there's a lot of high anxiety, and there shouldn't be. And we've just let college admissions completely get out of control. And the anxiety levels are so ridiculous. So I like to spend the bulk of my time with parents and students when I'm presenting, debunking myths and calming anxieties. So I try to keep it really kind of light and fluffy.
Good.
But this talk, it was a TEDx talk, and I definitely had to prep. And I really had some problems with it because I don't like being over rehearsed. And I had this fear of it sounding really, you know, kind of rote, like memorization. I was pretty nervous, and I told you about kind of being in, kind of brought down by the committees and stuff like that. But when my foot hit the stage on the day of the talk, it's like the cheesy stuff you read about. Like, literally, it was just like that. It was like, call it divine intervention, whatever. There was something, and I was so excited, and I had never felt so authentic giving that talk as I did the day of the actual talk. And, I felt like connection with the audience. I felt empathy with the audience, and it just flowed. And I remember there was a brief second in the talk, in the middle of the talk, where my mind did not know what the next word was, and it just came out. You know, it was just so, it felt so, so good. And I was so grateful for that moment. And like I said, after that, it was like, give me anything. Like, I can totally, because that was really, like I said, I'd given lots of talks, but that was the first one that had to be rehearsed because they had to hear it beforehand. And that was a really interesting experience. So
yeah, it's one of those things where I talk to a lot of athletes about the rhythm of the game, and I talk to a lot of business people about the rhythm of sales or the rhythm of education or anything. Once you get there, it flows, and it's really sweet.
Yep.
For a lot of people, and
yep.
They always say, "I was just in a rhythm," you
yep.
know. And that's one thing for anything we do. It's
yep.
find that rhythm, find that flow, find where you're at, because it's not going to be where everyone else is at. I've heard public speaking people all the time go with this. I always say, go with your own flavor. You know, not everyone's a chocolate fan. You can be vanilla, strawberry, whatever. You know, that's really for me. I like hearing from other people because I'm like, I've choked up on stage before. I have sweat. I have, that's why I wear black a lot. But, you know, it's been really awkward and really weird. And it's interesting because you've said TEDx and a lot of those things like where they make you rehearse. Like, I feel as if I'm not as genuine when I have to tell them what I'm going to do beforehand because I'm a lot about questions and actions. Yes. I like interacting.
Yes.
So when you're out there, you seem like you do the interaction stuff much better.
Yeah, I love, like I said, I love interactive talks much, much better. I usually give the bulk of my talk to, like I said, questions and answers, and because I want it to be relevant to the audience, you know? But this was something that's, I mean, obviously a TEDx talk like isn't a conversation, unfortunately. It's not as interactive. But I think a really good, you know, the TED speakers who I've really admired are those who look as though they are just speaking to a group of friends. And I those are the talks I really enjoy, and those that are very, that aren't just filled with cliches and rhetoric, and they're really authentic. And so I enjoy watching them, you know, and I think they're great. But yeah, it was a new experience for sure. You know, I'm glad I did it. It was a new challenge, I guess you could say, so.
Yeah, those challenges were interesting when I first started doing it because I like to call, I call it the shock and awe health campaign. So I'll come to businesses, schools, et cetera, so forth, and kind of tell them the reality of where our system's at and the reality of where you need to be and what it's going to do to not only your brain power, but your development, your future life for yourself. And it's interesting. But that shock and awe campaign, I really like that title because when I was coming up with them, I'm like, I want to knock their socks off. How do I do that? Shock and awe is war style. Not really. Wasn't going for that, but it came out like that. I'm like, oh, we're just going with it. So I go with the flow. But cool. Wrapping things up here, Alex, I always like people getting to know you. So you obviously, you have a younger daughter, but what is it that you do outside of when you're not boss lady, CEO, all these things? What do you do? What do you do out in Reno?
You know, I wish I had a nice, like, you know, list of hobbies. It's one of the things that I wish, one of the things I tell my students is to preserve the hobbyist. You know, don't let your hobbies go by the wayside. And I'm afraid that sometimes I've done that in my own life, and so maybe I'm a bit of a hypocrite, but I try to get students to hold on to their hobbies. I do enjoy reading, and I drive a lot, so I'm typically listening to audiobooks. I try to carve out time for travel as much as I can, even if it's a quick road trip. But honestly, when I'm not working, I want to hang with my daughter. Like, that's what I want to do when I'm not working. And, you know, now until December, a good chunk of my time is also in the classroom. So I'm finishing up my MPA. And so a lot of any extra time is devoted to that. But I want to hang with my daughter, you know, and I want to play with her and go out with her and go for walks with her. And so that's what we do. I just started going to the gym again. Really like anti-gym for a long time, but I realized that with my schedule now, I was a big snowboarder in college. And I haven't been snowboarding in like 2 years, and it's really hard for me. I'm gonna take my daughter next year. I've made it myself a goal, like we're gonna go as a family next year. But the reason I didn't, you know, in the last 2 years, I was like, that's more time away from my daughter. I've got the time away from my daughter when I'm in school, the time away from my daughter I'm working. I want to hang out with my husband and daughter when I'm not at work. So, but we're gonna try to pick it up again next year. That was a big love of mine, was snowboarding, and that's kind of fallen by the wayside. But yes, I am at a gym now. I can say I've got the key card, and I feel very proud of myself. So.
And that's the thing. I encourage people to be healthy in any way they can. My gym is an 80-pound kettlebell at home that I swing 75 times, 3 times a week. That's all I do. Other than that, I control every aspect of nutrition, all the other stuff, but. I'm going to steal that, preserve the hobbyist. I'm going to steal that. So for all my listeners out there, if you hear me say that or anything else, I stole that. So just letting you know right now, I steal a lot of things from people, but I always give due credit since it's all recorded on my podcast. But
what is it? Steal like an artist? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I always like that because I always like to tell people, I have no original ideas. I've just read it or seen it somewhere.
None of us do.
Yeah. Like, you have an original idea in fitness, it's really not. Even if it's new equipment, it's not a new muscle. It's impossible. So, you know, but wrapping things up, Alex, I want you to always say, because I always like this, what are 3 books that you recommend to someone who might be an aspiring coach, mentor, teacher, much like yourself, who went to do great things in entrepreneurial world? What are 3 books you'd recommend for them, even when you're reading now?
Yeah, definitely. So I am a big fan of Sir Ken Robinson. I was fortunate enough to see him speak in San Francisco. So he's got lots of stuff, but I like The Element. That was one of my favorites of his. I also really like Where Good Ideas Come From by Stephen Johnson. I also, his, under Stephen Johnson, I also like The Invention of Air. I think that's a good one. And I can't really say that it's one of my favorites, but it's one of the most recent ones that I just nod my head a lot at, because it's something that, it, what he says I try to do in my practice every day, but I'm glad that now a wider audience can hear it. And that's Frank Bruni's Where You Go Is Not Who You Are. And it's all about kind of the college admissions hysteria and mania, and I really recommend it, to especially to parents. And I hate to say it, parents, but you guys are usually the ones who put the stress on the kids. So this would be a good one for you guys to read. So if you're falling into the helicopter parent category and starting to say Stanford, Harvard, and Yale a lot, read this book.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that, because I know there's a lawsuit against Harvard right now for apparently admissions of something. I read about
one?
It. And just yeah, so wrapping things up, listeners, I want to thank Alex for one, because, you know, as you guys know, I'm in Reno now. I'm going to be with these people all the time, and you're going to hear them more than once on my podcast, and I'm going to reference them all the time. So thank you so much for making the time to come and talk to 360 Coaching and obviously myself. So I want to really thank you for that.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you coming down. So
awesome. So for those listeners, again, we are going to be doing a lot of interviews up here. We have got a lot of exciting people, mostly on Startup Row and at the university. So you guys will be hearing more from me. This is 360 Coaching with John Christmas IV. Reach out to me, and I'm going to be putting all of Alex's stuff for Dunce. I'm going to put it up on the site so you guys can connect with her, social media, all those other things. So you guys reach out to me. Let me know what you guys are thinking. Thank you so much for listening, guys.